Talk to us now and go to the TNT Radio Interactive live chat room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT. You're with Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Joseph Arthur's Technicolor Dreamcast. My next guest I met at a creator's summit. She's a very inspirational figure, character, a great writer. I met her through Patrick Henningsen, TNT's very own Patrick Henningsen, at this big creator summit. Hesher was there, Brian Hesher McLean, Adam Ruckus Clark, all the TNT all-stars. It was awesome. And I met Karen Hunt there. Karen Hunt is my next guest. She is a writer, artist, kickboxer who started the first boxing club for girls in Luxor, Egypt. She writes about the big picture through a personal lens, exposing the lies of the media. She says, trust in God, be fearless, no surrender. Trish Wood says, Karen is one of the most astute writers working today. And her Substack is one of my favorites. It's called Break Free with Karen Hunt. The latest one is called Only Paper is Safe. In this AI world, which she also writes a lot about, she's saying she's missing the feel of paper. Our relationship with paper. What happened to our paper friendship, Karen? Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm always happy to talk to you. It's great to see you.
Good to see you too.
Yeah. Well, yes, as you say, I write a lot about technology. I write a lot about a lot of different things, but I always go back to the basics of, you know, we always need to go back to the basics of where we came from. Me, martial artist. I go back to the basics of your katas, the simple things that we do. These are our foundations, and so from me, from my foundation, it's books. When I discovered books as a child, that led me into these magical worlds. And I'm really sad that it seems like many people have forgotten about books. We don't have access to books the way that we used to. So I've been writing these pieces on Sundays, Reflections for a Sunday, and I did this piece on paper, and how we are losing our relationship with this tangible that we can touch with our hands, that we can turn the pages, and that keep us grounded in the real world. So that's basically what it was about.
Yeah, it's interesting when you break it down like that, because I mean, I'm an artist as well, and so my relationship with paper is pretty deep. I mean, my favorite medium to work on is paper. I would get 300-pound. I used to get 300-pound watercolor paper sheets that came in 60-by-40-inch sheets. Massive. And 300-pound is super thick. You could pretty much stand that piece of paper up. And it wasn't cheap. I forgot how much it was. Sheet. Yeah, it was like $60 a sheet or something like that. But I used to go to the art store and get like 10 of them for like $600. And I figure if I sold one, I would at least, you know, I'd be good. And it used to always be worth it, you know. But that relationship with paper, and paper as a beautiful object, like Arches watercolor paper, and, you know, you don't need to get 300-pound 40-by-60. It comes in 120-pound or whatever, and it's thinner, but a beautiful paper. You're right. There is something about the texture of it, the sort of feel of it. What do you think we're missing out by not having as much of a close connection with paper? It's also, you know, it comes from trees, right? So it's a connection with nature.
Yeah, and it lasts a long time. So, well, also I want to say I'm an artist as well. So I have the same connection with paper that you do. I love to go, one of my favorite things, look at the paper, to feel the paper, you know, what kind of paper do I want to use, smooth or rough, you know, and then you have that blank piece of paper, and with that blank piece of paper, you can do whatever you want. But once you do it, that's it. It's there. You know, there's only one original. There's just one original. I mean, you can make copies, it can be diluted, in certain ways, especially when you put it on the internet. Anything can happen to it. But with that original piece, then it's just there. And it lasts a very long time. Books last for a very, very long time. One of the things that I said in this little piece that I wrote was going to Dublin to Trinity College and seeing the Book of Kells. I mean, this ancient book that's there. And then, but what I liked more was I saw these incredible illuminated manuscripts, these Persian manuscripts, all the detail, all the careful parts of it. And they shine. There's like an inner beauty to these. And I think it's, and I also say it's one of the reasons that the elites, you know, who want to capture us into this virtual world. They want us to fade out of reality and capture us in this virtual world. And that's one of the reasons why they hate the written word, and they have their minions going around, you know, destroying original artwork. What happens when you destroy the original? It's gone. You can never, ever get it again. And now we don't know what's real and what's fake anymore because of the internet. I mean, there's a lot of great things about the internet. You know, here we are conversing on the internet, but we need to remember that balance of our roots and where we came from. And if we lose that, you know, we lose, you know, thousands of years of history of who we are. And it would be a tragedy.
Yeah, it's true. It's interesting. I didn't even think about that. They have their minions trying to destroy art. Are they really destroying art, or are they just like destroying the frames and the glass frames, or have they actually gotten to some art and painted on art and destroyed it yet?
Obviously these paintings are protected, but I think there was one painting of somebody recently that they actually did slash the actual painting. I think they probably would. I mean, they're destroying statues and things like that. When I was a child, my family, we were traveling all over the world. I've lived a long time. So this was in the late 1960s. And we went and visited all these incredible places. And there wasn't the kind of security that there is now. To stand in front of the David, to go into the Sistine Chapel, to stand in front of the Pieta, to go to the Middle East and see these, you know, walk through these ruins, to go to the pyramids and just go inside the pyramids. We could even have climbed on the outside of the pyramids. Nobody would have cared. So everything now, sadly, that's why things are not even accessible anymore, because somebody will come along and destroy it. So we can't get even close to these, you know, beautiful, beautiful creations. I used to go to the Tate Gallery when I lived in London and sit in front of Waterhouse's The Lady of Shalott. It's a huge, big painting of her, the Lady of Shalott, who lived in this tower. Tennyson wrote a great poem about her. And she can only see things through a mirror. She's locked in this tower and she sees things through a mirror. And the minute that she turns to look at reality, you know, the spell comes upon her and she ends up, floating down this river in this boat. And I used to just sit there and stare at that painting, you know, close up. And I'm not sure that you could do that anymore. They'd probably come and throw me out. They think I was, you know, sitting there for too long or something.
It seems like a metaphor for our digital world. Yes, the mirror is the digital world. Are you trying to tell me that on purpose? Because that's where my mind went.
Like, it's one of my favorite poems. Yeah. A very powerful poem. And the mirror cracks from side to side. You know, she's looking through this mirror. And of course, she sees this Lancelot, this knight that she falls in love with, you know, and so she's tempted. She knows if she turns away from the mirror, you know, the spell will fall upon her. But she does it anyway, just for that moment of feeling reality, you know, what's real, what's true. And she gives everything for that, you know, for that moment of reality.
It's wild though too, because and I want to talk to you about writing a blog, because you've been super consistent with it ever since I've known you, which is now going on years, which is interesting.
Crazy, isn't it?
And I remember when we met, I was like, yeah, I started writing a blog, and then I didn't keep up with it, and then I didn't write again for like a year. And recently I've been writing one and keeping up with it, and it feels so good to do that, like actually posting, you know, every other day or whatnot. And one thing I'll do is I've been using AI to put a visual element to some of them. And I wonder what you think of this. And I know you're pretty sort of suspicious about AI in general, but hear me out on the way I've been using it for my blog, which is I will insert what I write about and tell it to make a visual representation of that. And so the themes of what it spits back out are coming from my imagination. So there's a humanity to them, and there's an originality to them. And then I also guide the sort of prompts, and then I'll even sometimes paint over them digitally. I'll paint, use a painter program, and I'll give them my style. Now, sometimes I don't paint over them either. I just let it be what it spits out. I sort of mix and match, but I think it's kind of weirdly awesome because it's this. I kind of like to write something, and then I look forward to what the digital, like what the sort of AI representation of that will be. And a lot of times it's pretty awesome. I had this one blog I wrote about Lou Reed and Jesus, and it gave me like Lou Reed imagery with Jesus hanging out in New York City, riding a cab together and stuff like that. Like, it was pretty epic what it gave me. And, you know, and I did another one with talking about Taxi Driver, and I told it to give me the guy, you know, a Mohawk guy, but it won't give you one that looks like De Niro. I mean, it is a creative act. So it's like, I know that in a lot of artists think, oh, hey, that's stealing art, or that's not an original art, but it is original because I've never seen Jesus and Lou Reed riding a taxi before. You know what I mean? And like, it's like that came from the visual element. So what's your take on that?
Well, that's interesting because it's very interesting that the words are so powerful. So if you know how to use your words, I mean, maybe you can actually create something amazing, you know, in partnership with AI some way. So I don't see that as something, you know, terrible. There could be some really, but you still... I think it's great for people to be able to use these tools. All that I'm saying is it's the same when, you know, photography came along. They thought, oh, no, photography will take over. There won't be any more painting. You know, all of these things. We always think that. But somehow these basic things that we have are still very important to us. So that's basically, you know, what I'm saying. It's very... easy, you know. The thing about technology is the overriding danger of technology, and the way that they are able to sell it to us is that it makes our lives so convenient. Everything becomes so convenient. So it's very easy and very simple to then, you know, to create something. You don't have to, you know, the masters of old, they had to spend hours upon hours upon hours learning things. You know, we don't need to do that anymore. We have AI. It's going to make our lives wonderful. It's going to make everything so much simpler, so much easier. But I think what you're saying is interesting because there will be people who have a flair and a talent and an ability to use their words to create exceptional things probably in this manner. So I'm not saying that isn't a possibility or couldn't be a very interesting and, you know, great thing. I'm just saying let's remember the balance, you know?
Yeah, I think it's a crap painter, to be honest. Like, I, you know, it's funny because it's actually amazing on some level, but it's also cheesy. It veers towards cheesy a lot. Like, it kind of does. That's why I started painting on top of it, because it was a little too hokey sometimes, like a poster that you would get at like some head shop for stoners. Like, a lot of the imagery would be like that kind of thing. Like, wow, man, you know, like AI has this like, wow, man factor. And sometimes that's cool. But then sometimes I would just be like, oh, I'm getting bored of this. Like, it's a little hokey. And so I started just messing it up on purpose. And that was interesting as well. But I totally agree with you. I think it's like Andy Warhol, you know, like if we look at him and you know, he was the one that made the Brillo boxes and was like, this is art, and then put that in a museum. And people were like, what the heck is this? Or the Sample or the Campbell's soup kitchen. I mean, soup can, the tomato soup and all that, you know, like he called that stuff art. And then he would also do, what do you call it? The printing, the screen printing and, and all that stuff. I think he flew in the face of what was considered art or what was considered acceptable techniques. And he would sort of lean into those things. So I kind of view AI in a similar way. Like it's almost funny just to boldly use it when you're not supposed to. It makes me want to use it more. And I feel like the part that makes me want to use it more is the sort of punk rock art spirit in me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I think that like if you look at, let's say you take Jackson Pollock, you know, for example, well, what did he do? I mean, all he did was just throw this paint on, you know, on a canvas. So what? Same thing with, if you look at Andy Warhol, but what they did, if you look at a Jackson Pollock painting, the energy, I mean, there's
something,
it's an amazing painting. But then what happened? Everybody else started trying to do this, you know,
and they couldn't do it as well, but they couldn't do it as well. It didn't, it kind of revealed how difficult it was, even though I don't think he even believed that he was legit on some level, because it was at least in that movie. And then he got drunk and ran off the road with the young girl and died or whatever, because he thought the journalist thought he was a faker, you know.
I mean, and that, you know, but that's where the energy comes from. You know, we are flawed creatures, you know. I mean, they always say art, great artists suffer so much, you know, and that's how what they're great, how they create such greatness. But AI doesn't have that. What AI does is it deconstructs things and then it puts them back together again in some sort of random way, but we don't really, and in fact, we don't really understand, because I've written some other pieces about that as well. We actually don't understand even that process that AI goes through to deconstruct and then, you know, reconstruct things. But it's, I had heard somebody described it as somebody sitting in a gray room. It's all just gray. And what they're doing is, they're, you know, this is AI, but somebody is feeding them words and then they're creating something out of that, but they're never actually lived in, they never had there's no emotion for it. All of that comes from the outside. So but I guess it's sort of like your brush has no emotion, you're giving it life, or the paper, you know. So it's kind of a similar thing, but the danger is that we just become very, very lazy.
Yeah, or formulate different ways of creativity. I mean, like I can put like, you know, 8 images on a blog that, and then sort of like separate sections with these images, and it's pretty cool. I mean, I wouldn't be able to do that otherwise. It just would take months, you know. But it's interesting, because you know how when you go like the YouTube algorithm, or even algorithms in general, sometimes have a spiritual connection. Like they'll be like, you'll be going through something and you won't even necessarily mention it to anyone, but you'll go through your YouTube thing or your algorithm and it'll come up with some answer to some looming question that you have within. And you know, I don't know if you've ever had that experience. This kind of thing happens to me all the time, and I've heard other people say that it happens to them, and it makes you feel like, oh, maybe God, or there's a portion of God or spirit in the algorithm. It makes sense that it would be there, right, in some level. And I feel like this kind of AI art thing is similar. Not that you would depend solely on it, but sometimes it spits things out, and especially you should try it sometime. I wonder what you would think with your writing, because it might respond to your writing in a way that would surprise you and kind of almost touch you. I wouldn't say move you to tears, but might touch you. You know what I mean?
I might try it. I'm curious.
Yeah,
send me something, whatever the program is or whatever it is, how you do it. And I want to look at your writing, because I didn't know that you were back to doing it. So that's very exciting.
Yeah. JosephArthur.com if you want to see my blog. Let me take a quick break. We'll be right back after these words on TNT.
TNT's Mark Morano.
And there's a whole history of this idea that the establishment, the powers that be, the regime in power, likes the idea of a little eco-terrorism to keep the population hungry. I mean, if you think about it, their policies, government policies of the Great Reset, Net Zero, Climate Agenda, are quite literally eco-terrorism or a form of terrorism. It's, as Jesse Jackson used to say, it's economic violence, it's economic terrorism. Jesse Jackson used to say that about the Reagan administration. But in this case, it's the intentional collapse of energy, food, transportation, free speech, all to achieve and make us safer and give them more power under the auspices, if you will, of a crisis.
Mark Morano on today's News Talk, TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
You're with Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And we're back. Welcome back to Joseph Arthur's Technicolor Dreamcast. I'm here with Karen Hunt. We're looking at her Substack right now. There's another one called No Spot No. We kill people based on metadata. David Cole, former director of both the CIA and NSA, that was in 2014. Robots, data collection, and surveillance, artificial general intelligence, and soon to be, or so we are told, artificial general super intelligence. It's all coming together, writes Karen Hunt. What's this mean, Karen? What is artificial general super intelligence?
Well, that's basically when, to break it down to the simplest way, is that it's just when it becomes smarter than we are, smarter than humans. I mean, this is the goal. I don't know why. I can't imagine why that people would want to have another type of a creation that they've created that would be smarter than them. But this is the ultimate goal. And it's progressing at a pretty fast rate. I mean, who knows if they will actually be able to achieve that goal or not. But what all of this AI is doing and is it's being created actually to kill, unfortunately. So they use this, you know, DARPA was the generator of a lot of this technology. A lot of the technology that we use, as I said before, to make our lives more convenient, such as facial recognition, any type of thing, sort of security on your phone, all of those types of things, the drone that your child has fun flying in the sky, all of these things are being used to actually kill. So it's kind of disconcerting when you think about it, because at the moment, I wrote another piece about these drones in Ukraine. There's a huge, I wrote a whole thing about this history of spies in Ukraine and how they've developed all of this. And they're using these, they actually are now getting civilians they're teaching them how to put together drones that can kill. And people like tech savvy young people are doing this and then selling them. And Ukraine's goal is to have like over a million of these like small drones created also by the public. So if you think about, you know, the future of this, that one day maybe, you know, the kid down the street who's mad at at, you know, somebody, some girl, because she doesn't like him or something, could take his drone and go in to her neighborhood and spy on her or do something. We already have, I have a friend who lives in Ojai, California, who told me everybody has a drone. And Ojai, the people there that have lived there a long time are really obnoxious. So they go around spying on their neighbors with their drones. And if they leave their garbage cans out for too long, they complain. They'll take a picture and they complain about it. At my grandson's school, he's in elementary school, the teachers have had to start taking the kids into the classroom during the playtime, because some man sitting in the park far away, you know, not close to the school, has been flying a small drone over the school when the kids are outside. And there is nothing, there is no law against it. There's nothing that the teachers can do. I mean, they have to make a law, perhaps, you know, because there's federal laws and then there's state laws and there's local laws. It's very complicated. So this person could be anybody, you know, and you don't know who it is. So that's just one small example of what of how this technology can get out of hand.
Well, it's out of hand on a perv level for sure. I get that. But like, it seems like we're still a long way away from people being able to mount artillery that could kill somebody with a drone and be able to like commandeer that sort of technology. That seems a bit far out. And I would imagine it would be hard for people to get that, but maybe that I'm totally wrong on this. You're saying in Ukraine, they're teaching people how to have these already?
Yes. I wrote a whole article about that, and it's all, you know, it's part of their technology is sort of taking over the entire country, and it's actually, I think, who is Luke Skywalker? Mark Hamill. Not Mark Hamill.
Oh, that's anyway. Luke Skywalker. Oh, Han Solo was Harrison Ford.
Right. Okay. So Mark Hamill. Within like a few hours, he raised over $1 million or something for this program in Ukraine, just by in a crowdsourcing program to raise money for these drones for Ukraine. So I mean, it is already out of hand. I have a video on this machine, a robot dog being landed in a neighborhood with a gun on it to parole the neighborhood. The police, and it's in China that's happening, but our police force have these types of dogs already.
Oh yeah, no, yeah. I'm sure the police do. I'm saying kids, like, because I'm just thinking of like ordering a drone from Amazon already costs like $250 or something for a decent one.
Well, this kid,
put a gun on it. It's got to be.
This kid that was interviewed in Ukraine, well, he's 23 years old. He orders the parts online. He assembles the drone, and then he sells it. And now they're starting to teach the civilians how to do this. I mean, you can assemble. I'm surprised it doesn't get more out of hand. That's with true. Everything, but you can do anything, find anything online, you know? So, yeah.
Well, in terms of the first thing you said about that, they're wanting AI to be smarter than humanity. Do you think that's possible? And how are we defining intelligence, really? Because Elon Musk, I forget who he was responding to, but it was on X, and he said, oh, he was responding to Ray Kurzweil's interview with Joe Rogan, which was pretty interesting. If you've seen that, like the singularity, Ray Kurzweil talks about the singularity when technology will evolve faster than humanity can even perceive its evolution. Basically, the kind of spooky AI will be smarter than humanity, and from there, it'll take over the world and will become robots that live forever or something like that. It's like a dystopian vision. And so I think Elon Musk was like feeling a little like dystopian madman lunatic threatened or something, because he responded saying AI won't be just, you know, smarter than one man. AI will be smarter than all of humanity combined times a million or so, you know. It was like that. And I was just like thinking, like, how are you defining intelligence, man? Because like I said earlier, I'm already using AI. For one, it's cheesy. It's not good at writing. It can't even spell things right. Like, I have to say do it without words all the time. It never gets spelling right, which is weird. But beyond that, it's going to get all that stuff right, right? It's going to, you know, it clearly will have access to more information than any human being, or perhaps all human beings combined. Okay. It will have access to data far beyond any human being. That makes sense. Or is that what we're calling intelligence, though? Is that is that as deep as intelligence goes? Because to me, intelligence is the human imagination, which is akin to God, or the sort of birthplace of all creation. With our human imagination, we can literally create a reality, you know. I mean, so our intelligence to me is more defined by imagination than how much knowledge we have.
Yeah, well, at the moment, it's just collecting massive amounts of data. I mean, that's what we are feeding basically AI. That's what we're doing. I mean, every time we go. Right. Yeah, you know, we're feeding AI with all this.
But it will never have imagination. It will never be even vaguely as smart as humanity on that metric.
No, but so what it does, but you have to remember there's another side to this, which is the biomedical, you know, that side of it, where they're creating these, you know, trying to create like actual little brains. The scary thing is that we don't understand ourselves. We don't understand our own brains. We don't understand ourselves, and yet we're trying to create something else. So this is kind of ridiculous. That's why I don't think that we can ever do it, because we don't even understand our own brains. Our own brains are so incredibly complex beyond what we could ever, you know, define. I mean, we are finite beings. I believe in God, so I believe that God created me. God is infinite. I'm therefore, you know, I am finite. I cannot comprehend God. I cannot comprehend God. So it's kind of absurd for me to think that I could create. The only thing that I can create, therefore, is something less than I am. Right? I mean, it's kind of going to get diluted as it goes down. That's how I perceive it.
And that's how I would perceive it.
But these people are very arrogant and very, I think they're all kind of mad. I just think that they've gone a little berserk with their billions and their, you know, their power craze, you know. So I think that they imagine that they can do it, and they are looking, you know, it's always the search for immortality. It's this obsessive search for immortality that goes all the way back to the Garden of Eden. So there's some, I've written some interesting pieces. They're searching for, you know, there's that spark of life. You know, there is a spark of life that happens. It's not in, if AI opens its eyes, there is not that spark. What is that spark of life?
It's never
going
to have that. Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, when the so-called smartest man in the world is boldly claiming that AI is going to be way smarter than every other human being combined.
He's not the smartest man in the world.
I know, but I'm just saying, I agree, but you know, that's his like reputation, right? He's like, if we're watching Iron Man on planet Earth, he's the Robert Downey Jr. character. And he's boldly claiming, you know, that it's smarter than every human being combined, when it's like, dude, are you not even going to like scratch the surface on what intelligence actually is? Because, you know, like, when you say too that we're finite, I don't even know if I agree with that. I do agree that we're gonna not be able to create something on the same level as God, but I do think we have access to the infinite, and that makes us infinite to the degree that we identify with the infinite. Like, we have the capacity to identify with the finite aspects of ourselves, our ego, or our thought forms, or we can identify with the infinite aspect of ourselves, which is presence in our imagination. I don't know if you're familiar with Neville Goddard, but he always talks about God himself is the human imagination. And I think that's kind of an interesting thing to consider.
Yes, there's the physical. And then if you believe, you know, there's the spiritual. We have our mind, the matter, And, you know, this obviously this body, you know, they want to keep this body living forever, which is crazy because who really would want to live forever here? But to, you know, if you, yes, so we have a connection to the infinite, but, and we, you know, you could say, okay, if you believe, you know, we do go on forever, you know, when we die, when our body dies, we don't, you know, that's not the end of us. We don't, but we don't know what that is. We don't understand that. We there are many, many things we just don't understand, but we instinctually are drawn to them. We know, we really do know what is true, you know, what is right, what is true in our hearts, you know, in our spirits, in our beings. And I think that's what we are drawn to that. I don't know what people try to explain. I mean, can you explain? I can't explain God. I don't think anybody really can. If you try to put it into words, we can't understand that. Maybe we are part of some great connection, you know, but that's, I think that still is beyond us because we are inside of our bodies. I mean, we can't even see ourselves. If you think about it, have you ever seen your face?
Mm-mm, no.
Yeah, we, you know, we see other, we can see other people.
And it's a damn shame because I've heard it's quite attractive.
Yeah, at my stage, I was like, oh, I would take my glasses off. The less I see, the better. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, these are all interesting. I think that, like, I know in my heart, I want to know. I want to know these things. There's something that's, you know, maybe we need to move on to another level, you know, eventually where we can absorb and comprehend these things better. But at this stage, in this world, in this life, I don't think that we can do that. And so it's these people, they get very frustrated because if you have everything, if you have all the billions and everything, and you know, you're still going to die, you know, it must be very frustrating.
I would not be frustrated with it. I would just want to play with my kid all the time and make more babies and, like, I don't know, man, make art and make music and just, like, have barbecues and ride around in a cool car. I mean, I don't know. And you could also just give so much. I don't know. Like, I would not go dark side. I don't think I wouldn't, but I spent all my time or a lot of my time seeking God. And I think, like, if you don't have that, if you don't have that as your sort of main base that you root everything else off of, I mean, I do a lot of things in life, but none of them are on the same level as that aspect. Because, like you said, you want to know. I want to know, too. I want to know what it's like to... I'm interested in getting to know and cultivating a relationship with the Creator, you know? And we have that.
That's the heart of it, right there.
Yeah, that's the heart of it, right? Let's talk about that on the other side of these words on TNT.
People might tell you that Lyme doesn't kill people, but we are losing people. People disappear from their lives.
One of the scariest things that I had to deal with was memory loss. Not just like I don't remember what I did last week, but like I forgot all the words to my own songs. I remember going to my primary care physician and he was like, you are 100% healthy, there's nothing wrong with you. And my response was, that's impossible, I'm dying.
I wasn't working. I had all of these hospital bills. We had to move out of our home and move into my parents' basement.
I just wish I could have truly been present in those big moments, you know, when she took her first steps or, you know, her first day of preschool. Lyme is such a thief and it goes undetected because no one is looking for it.
For more information and prevention tips, go to projectlyme.org.
When I had my heart event, close to 4 years ago, I was at the gym, thought I deserve a coffee, and thought I'll top up with fuel, ordered a coffee. But while I was pumping fuel, I started to get chest pains. But then it got worse and worse and worse. So then I was leaning on the counter thinking, yeah, something's not quite right. So then I went to wait for the coffee, and that's when it really, really hit. And Joy just, you know, mouthed, do you need an ambulance? And I remember nodding. I wasn't even thinking about a heart attack. I just thought, something is seriously wrong with me here. So when the cardiologist came to see me, she informed me that I'd had what they call a widowmaker heart attack. Bit of a shock when someone says, you know, you nearly died. Everybody should be aware of all the symptoms of a heart attack. that women can have that aren't typical of the shoulder pain, the right arm pain. I go to the gym, I do yoga, Pilates, I swim, I go on bike rides, and yet I still had a heart attack. You just don't know, it could be you.
The forgotten poor are waiting for mercy ships. And now, our newest state-of-the-art hospital ship with volunteer medical staff will double our ability to help those who need it most. To learn more, go to mercyships.org today.
You're with Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And we're back with Karen Hunt. So, Karen, you said that's the heart of it, trying to cultivate a relationship with the Creator. What do you mean by that's the heart of it?
I think that that's what drives all of us. You know, we want to know that. We want to know our Creator. We want to have that relationship. We feel, yes, separated from our Creator. And to think that, you know, if you take it back to the Garden of Eden, what did the Satan say? You can be God. You can, why should you have to answer to this being that's greater than you? Mm-hmm. You can be that yourself. And that's been the lie and the...
That's the crux right there.
Yeah, and that's what has caused so much problems. When you say, if you had all those billions, if you had all that power, you'd just want to be happy and be with your family. And, you know, I mean, it's very hard. That's a good question, too. Why is it that once people get this power, they go to the dark side? I mean, power, you know, that saying, power, ultimate power corrupts ultimately.
Yeah.
Why does that have to, how unfortunate.
Just it imagine is, yeah.
If that didn't happen. And why is that? Because they, you know, everybody thinks, well, I can be God. They believe the lie. They latch onto that. They want that power instead of,
Surrendered.
Staying surrendered, exactly. And that's a word nobody likes. Nobody likes that word.
I like that word. People that, it depends on how broke down you've been, though. Like, it's like, it's easier for a rich man, it's easier for a camel to get through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven, you know, saith the Lord. That's in the Bible. So it must be true. It's interesting. I was watching this interview with Kanye West, this last week, and it was with him and Ty Dolla $ign, and they have the number one record, and I forget the program it was on. It was a really good interview. I think Kanye is endlessly entertaining, but I think the interviewer asked him about his connection with Jesus, and you know, he was making that music of, you know, Jesus is King and all that stuff. And then his new thing is more like showing off his wife's body and just very sort of, not what you would say is aligned with traditional Christian values, you could say. And then so I think the interviewer asked him about that, and he goes, well, I got my problems with Jesus, too, because I've been out here asking for some, asking a lot of prayers that have gone unanswered. And so, you know, like he was kind of in a state of rebellion that reminded me of the sort of the heart of what Satanism is, because Satan was apparently like the grooviest angel of them all, and then finally got ideas above his station and was like, nah, man, I'm not under anybody. And so there is that natural inclination. And listen, I'm not accusing Kanye of whatever. This could all be sort of marketing stuff, and who knows who that guy is. But he is an interesting example of what we're talking about here, because he does seem to be in a constant state of aggression and turmoil, and to the point now where he's in a state of rebellion, thinking his prayers have gone unanswered, even though he has a number one record and is massively successful and massively rich. And yeah, maybe he's been undone by some corruptive forces and Adidas has screwed him over, or whatever it is, whatever he's complaining about. But I just found that interesting, because it's gratitude. I was actually writing a blog. I didn't post it yet, but my blog today was all about gratitude and just how, how important gratitude is to cultivate. But there does seem to be a lack of gratitude and a lack of peace with a lot of people that make it to the mountaintop of success.
But I think this is a bad definition of success, because our success shouldn't be of this world. First of all, you know, Jesus said, if you follow me, give up everything to follow me, and you will be hated, you will be despised, you will be rejected. What happened to the first, the disciples, miraculously, they were all cowards. Miraculously, when Jesus died, rose from the dead, they turned into warriors of preaching and all of this, but were they successful by human standards? Absolutely not. We don't see the big picture. That's why we're very, myopic. We have a very, very small view of everything. Interesting thing, Bob Dylan, I'm writing, I was thinking about my thing for next Sunday. I don't want to give it away, but I can't help myself on this topic. At a certain point, he actually became a Christian. He actually read one of my dad's books, and that influenced him to become a Christian at a certain point in his life. And the song that he wrote, you got to serve somebody.
I quote it all the time. Yeah, it may be the devil, or it may be the Lord, but you gotta
serve somebody. And John Lennon got really mad at him. It got very offended and wrote a song about serving yourself. You need to serve yourself,
Yeah.
And of course then Bob Dylan, again, just like Kanye West, I think he just veered off from that. Anne Rice, who wrote all the vampire books, at a certain point, she became a Christian and wrote this book about, it was a total Christian-based book about werewolves, and it was not well received. And I think then she just gave up the Christianity, And I think, and Bob Dylan got a lot of flack for having that Christian perspective. So I think people, they want this, they have it all wrong. If you are speaking the truth, if you are speaking truth, people aren't going to come along and just love you for it. They might just kill you, So, and I think that's what we don't get straight. We have such a skewed idea of what it means to be successful, and it's something in your heart. Joy is not happiness, or is not a quick fix. Joy is something that's there.
Peace of mind.
Peace that passes all understanding. Mm-hmm. And it's there, and it stays with you regardless. And so many people have suffered so much. Died for what they believed, and it makes kind of a mockery of these people who gave up everything for these people that so easily throw it aside. Like you're saying, Kanye West did.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, John Lennon said you got to serve yourself. I would argue that, it may be the devil or it may be the Lord, but you got to serve somebody. If you're serving the Lord, you are serving yourself, clearly. But as John Lennon also said, I give you everything I got for a little peace of mind, and so I would just say to John, if you serve the Lord, you get a peace of mind, bro. You can still keep everything you got and have peace of mind.
Might not be able to.
it's wild. I don't know that. For me, it's down to identifying with your thoughts or your ego, or identifying with presence. And living in the kingdom of heaven is like identifying with presence, So Bob Dylan put out two Christian rock records, Saved and Slow Train Coming. I think Slow Train Coming was first. And I don't know that he gave it up. He gave up Christian music as full on, but I don't know that he's not a Christian. Who knows?
Yeah, I have to say, obviously, I don't know. So I wouldn't want to make some sort of judgment like that. So I probably worded that in the wrong way. But it's easy to be, it's easy to become discouraged, especially in this world that we live in, where everything is about material possessions and collecting more. And, we've got these billionaires now everybody's obsessed with, there's always a race, like who's the richest, now it's Jeff Bezos. Now I think, and again, it's Elon Musk, and all the billionaires are, I wrote a piece. It's like something like $500 million there, this one billionaire is spending to fly to the moon. He's got it all set up now. I think it's on Elon Musk's spaceship. So $500 million to go to the moon. In the meanwhile, you know, everybody else is supposed to cut back on their carbon footprint, you know? so there's a big disconnect, and yet we're still fascinated. Everybody would wish that they could be, you know, a lot richer, I'm sure.
Mm. Yeah, well, you want financial freedom. I would think that a certain degree financial freedom helps you just to be able to explore those things of the spirit. But I mean, it certainly has helped me in my life to be humbled and to be sort of pushed and galvanized into humility. You know, I mean, it's the greatest gift in the world, really, because it makes you sort of surrender your ego. That's the whole phrase about it's easier for a camel to make it through the eye of a needle, because if you have the ability to buy a $500 million moon ride, you know, how much humility are you really cultivating on a daily basis? How much seeking of the Father are you doing with, you know, when you have those kind of resources?
And I know that you stood up, like, you were very brave. You made a courageous move to stand up for what you believed and lost, you know, out. But I think, and I've done the same, and I've never for one moment regretted those decisions that I made, you know. And I think, you know, and God can bless you. He can give you. My father, you know, is always, I look up to my father. You know, he believed that God wanted him to become a writer. He was a very successful businessman, gave it all up. And at a certain point, we lost everything. We became very poor, but he never gave up his faith, never stopped believing that. And he became, you know, very successful as a Christian author. But he spoke out at that time. It was like in the 80s. He spoke out against all the big prosperity teachers, the big preachers. They all hated my dad, Dave Hunt, by the way, if any of you know of him. And they hated him because he didn't care. He would come into the studio with his, I mean, he didn't look scruffy, but he didn't buy all the expensive suits. Nobody could buy him. You know, I sat with, you know, who John Wooden was, he was the most famous a coach from UCLA, John Wooden. Hmm. I'm sure some of your listeners know who he is. He's a legend, the most incredible man. I sat with him shortly before he died. He had all the great players, Kareem Jabbar, all these great players on his team. And I sat with him before he died. And he said to me, you know, they offered me everything. He died not shortly after. I had like a 2-hour conversation with him in his little house. He lived in a little condo in Encino. And he said, and if I had just been willing to endorse a product, I would have had a big house on the, you know. And he said, nobody ever bought me. And he said, now that's all it's about. Anybody can buy you. It's not about, you know, this was basketball. It's not about the sport anymore. It's not about, you know, what he always said was be your best as a human being and everything else will follow. You know, now it's backwards, you know. So it was I was so thankful that I was able to have that conversation with him, and I never forgot it. But
why do you think he didn't want to endorse any product? Was it more just like you know, because that's how the music business used to be as well. You would never sell out your song to a commercial, but now everybody is bending over backwards to try to do that.
They own you then. You're not a free person. And you're promoting something maybe that you don't. Why do you believe it? Why are you giving your name to something that's, you know, just to sell some? It's like selling yourself.
Your soul.
Yeah, selling your soul. Yeah. So it was a quite incredible experience. Look him up, people. If you don't know John Wooden, look him up. Yeah.
Okay. Great man. So great talking to you again, Karen. It's been too long. And thank you for coming on. Tell everyone where to find you, your Substack, and I can't wait to read the new Bob Dylan one. He's one of my favorites.
It's going to be next Sunday, yeah. Okay, so it's Break Free with Karen Hunt on Substack, or you can go to khmezek, M-E-Z-E-K Substack.com. Substack.com. Yeah. That's where you'll find me. Or on X. Karen Elaine Hunt on X. Yeah.
All right, Karen. Thanks for coming on. And how often do you write? Every day?
Almost every day. I give myself a day off, but I'm very consistent with my writing because I write, you know, longer, more in-depth pieces a lot. So I have to spend, you know, I got myself into this, and now I kind of am obligated to keep on doing it, but I'm still excited by it, which I'm thankful for. I enjoy it.
It's awesome. It's inspiring, and I'm inspired by it. Karen Hunt, thank you so much for coming on. Keep listening, everybody. We'll be back with more on TNT.